I'm Ann Wordsworth, and our guests today, April the 11th, 2013, are Michael Cochran, John McNamara, and Peter Victor. And also here are John Swagan and Maria Leo.
So we're here to talk about the Environmental Bill of Rights and the deep origins of. And so anybody can start. What's a good starting point?
I think Michael's a good starting point.
Yeah, I think I may know things about where it came from that other people don't, because Ian Scott was Attorney General at the time, and we were discussing a number of projects that were designed to increase access to justice. We had done some family law reform, we were looking at, we'd looked at insurance reform and tort reform and Limitations Act reform. There were a whole bunch of projects that were underway. Even things like paralegals, bringing paralegals into the justice system, were all part of this access to justice initiative. But two things stuck out. One was we wanted to do something around class proceedings, class actions. And that recommendation had come out of an access to justice conference that Ian Scott had hosted in Toronto at the King Eddie. So we wanted to pursue that. There had been a Law Reform Commission report on class actions, very good report, but no one had ever really acted on it. Ian Scott said, just make it a priority. Let's get something going on this. Jim Bradley, at the time, I think was Minister of the Environment, he had his own idea about an Environmental Bill of Rights. I think he'd been, even as a private member, he'd put forward an Environmental Bill of Rights at one point in time, or floated the idea of it. And that Environmental Bill of Rights that he had in mind had a class action remedy in it, as I recall it. And when Ian Scott and I were chatting about it, I said, well, if we're going to do a class action procedure, it's not a substantive right, it's simply a procedure into which you insert substantive rights, why wouldn't we just do a generic class action and then an environmental cause of action could be inserted into that. So we agreed that that was the right way to go forward. So we had said to Jim Bradley at that time, just park your idea for an Environmental Bill of Rights. Let us take care of the class action stuff first, and then we'll come back to the Environmental Bill of Rights afterwards. So that's what we did. We put the advisory committee together. John was on that with some of the same faces that we had on this task force. Mm-hmm. Worked very well, terrific goodwill, and I think that process of that advisory committee on class action reform was kind of the prototype for this task force.
And there's a key change of government here that must
yeah, and it happened. That happened in the middle. That was October of 1990 that the election happened. So we had done the class action advisory committee. I guess it was 89, 90, that time frame. Howard Hampton actually was the Attorney General who ended up reintroducing that legislation. In the middle of that, we had finished the advisory committee work. I actually went to Washington for a fellowship after that and did a lot of the writing of the report and drafting of the bill on the plane, flying back and forth between Toronto and Washington. Did a lot of writing about it when I was in Washington. And they came back from that, and the government had changed in October of 90. And Ruth Greer was Minister of the Environment with her own private member's bill for an Environmental Bill of Rights. Ian Scott was now suffering in opposition. He really hated it. He was so unhappy. He wished that he'd been defeated. But he was in opposition. And as I recall, I think Bonnie Wine was the Director of Legal Services at Minister of the Environment. Her group was trying to get, I think, something going in an advisory committee, and as I heard it, sort of secondhand, is that there was a lot of tension. Anne's nodding, yes. There was a lot of tension in that. Somebody said that there were screaming matches at some of the meetings about what should be in the bill. And then I think somebody said, why don't we try... Somebody suggested, I don't know who it was.
It was Steve Schreiman.
Was it? Yeah, he was in the Premier's office, I guess, at the time. He was an environmental advisor. Mm-hmm. He said, why don't we try the thing that they did for the class proceedings? And then I got seconded over to Ministry of the Environment to do it and sort of set up the terms of reference. But I don't think a lot of people really knew, just by way of introduction, that the decision to do the class proceedings first was linked to the Environmental Bill of Rights discussion. I've always seen the two as being a package, really. Mm-hmm.
So then you came across, the NDP set up the task force.
What was
it called, the EBR task force?
Well, the advisory committee was set up under Ian Scott.
Yeah.
And we had finished the report and the drafting of the bill.
Same bunch,
lots of similar faces around.
So it was a rollover, as you're saying. So you already had this sort of unit working, right?
Yeah, and because I think at that time there was quite a bit of solidarity among Chamber of Commerce, Canadian Manufacturers Association, Canadian Federation of Independent Business.
Yeah.
There was another group. Did I mention Chamber?
CME.
You were with the Chamber, I think.
I did the Chamber thing, yeah.
I know that in Cabinet Office, they referred to you as the Gang of Four.
Really?
Yeah, the Gang of Four, because you also wanted, as I recall, labor reform was supposed to come along afterwards.
Yeah.
And because instead of, we were going to try and use the same process to do the labor reform, which would have been fantastic. Mm. Went the opposite way, though. Ended up being really painful. So it was the same people who were representing those business associations were available, same personalities, and we all worked well together.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple of new ones. I think Rick Lindgren, I don't think he was on the class action one.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it was transition interesting to me. Like, so we have this class action group and they run and they got their job done. And then sort of comes, we got this other EBR thing now, or the NDP, so you sort of move over those people and the structure, but really gets reconstituted.
Yes.
Retasked.
Yes, it's a whole new, fresh set of terms of reference, fresh negotiation of the content. That was really kind of a key thing around these advisory committees. One was the negotiation of the terms of reference, because everyone was asked, and this was something that Ian Scott insisted on, was that everyone had to sign up and commit to working on it. And if they, it was really kind of a deal, this is what I thought was interesting from a government point of view, it was really a deal between the members of the task force that if you work and you come up with a unanimous set of recommendations, I will ensure that it goes forward as a cabinet minister. And Ian Scott could say that with authority because he was so powerful in Peterson's government. Mm. So that was the deal. And then the same thing happened with the Environmental Bill of Rights Task Force. And I remember talking to Ruth Greer about this, because I had to say to her that, with Ian Scott, the deal was, if you do your work and you come up with a consensus, I will run with it. And Ruth really understood that, I think. And she had kind of an equivalent position, I would say, with the Ray government, authoritative and respected. We did the terms of reference, set up an agenda.
We spent a lot of time on that. To make sure it was nailed down, right?
And I'll tell you just a little of interesting anecdote about Ian Scott was that I came back to him once with the terms of reference for the class action advisory committee, and he said, "Is that rock solid?" And I said, "There are a couple of things we've fudged just to make sure everybody signs up." And he said, "No, you go back and you push on it and you push on it until every weakness in those terms of reference is pinned down." And he said, and then, I'll never forget, he said, and then once they put their nose on the cheese, we've got them. And so the terms of reference were very important for him, and we rolled that approach over into the Environmental Bill of Rights Task Force as well.
So now, Peter, you're in the ministry, environment this time.
Right. Well, I was. I joined the ministry again. I've been in the ministry in the 70s. For 4 years, I was. They hired two economists. I was one of the first they hired. So this was. So I came back in 91 as an ADM for a newly formed policy division.
Yes.
With minimal staff, maybe 20 people or something. I can remember Mike coming to our senior management meeting, which was all the deputy and all the ADMs. We met every week, talk about what was going on. And he briefed us on this thing called the Environmental Bill of Rights. And I remember sitting there thinking, I don't have the faintest idea about what he's talking about. I just don't, it was just so alien to my way of thinking, you know, the trained economist, I suppose, and never having thought about things in that way. And of course, the EBR, as we all know, is not the easiest thing to explain. So I sat listening, and I listened. He was a nice enough guy, and had a usual good meeting.
Had long
but
hair,
I can't remember how long after it was that I think Gary Posen was still the deputy at the time
when
he came in.
He was the co-chair.
And he said, well, you know, this is policy. It's yours. Oh, pity I didn't really understand what it was about. So anyway, at some point, there was a change in deputies, and the new deputy comes in. And at that time, the ADM for Science and Science and Standards, Jerry Roman, retired. And Richard DeCerny, the new deputy, said to me, I'd like you to handle the science division as well as the policy division on a temporary basis. I think in retrospect, he was just trying me out, actually. At the time, I didn't reflect on it. I just said, well, sounds interesting. It was interesting to me because I quickly discovered that with 20 people in that ministry, you couldn't do much on policy. But with 700 in the science division, you could do an awful lot. So I restructured that division and set up a program branch. Couldn't call it policy because that would confuse everybody. We were a program branch, but we had 100 people in the program branch. We were way bigger than the policy branch. And really, while I was there, that's where most of the policy of the ministry came out of, including the EBR. Well, So after a short while, DeCerny says to me, well, I think you'll stay with science. We'll find someone else for policy. Because I remember saying, well, that means I don't have to do the EBR. No, you, that's still yours. That was okay. But I thought he was a really good deputy, and he said, now, okay, you can pick whoever you want in the ministry to head up that program, the BEBR, because I couldn't do that as well as everything else. So by that time, I had a few encounters with Hella Tassin. Mm-hmm. I thought she would be the best person that was there to make that structure that you guys were developing really work, because it does take a person who's really good at detail and good people person, all of that. And I just thought she could do that, and I think it proved completely correct. Yeah, so my task was to take what the task force produced, and I think when I started participating in this, you hadn't finished your work, but you were well along. Mm. I mean, the whole thing had taken shape, and you were, you know, massaging. But I had to then set up an interministerial committee. We had people from right across the public service to work on this project, because the government had identified it as a signature project. This was something that simply had to happen, which is great when you're a civil servant to have that kind of authority to work with. So I found myself in a really interesting and fascinating position, because it was absolutely essential to maintain the unanimous support of the task force. Mm. It couldn't fracture. Mm. But at the same time, I had, I think there were 14 or 15 ministries represented around this table, senior people.
I used to come over and brief them on what the updates
right.
were.
Yeah. And they had to be brought on side. Not all of them started out that way. And it was kind of back and forth. I can't remember the details, but there were occasions when I would go back and meet with the task force or meet with Mike and say, look, here's a certain angle that's come up. And there'd be some, you know, to and fro. It was really a very creative time. It was, I can't think of anything negative to say about it, because it was a cooperation between people who were out there in the rest of the Ontario working together with the civil service to produce something that had very, by the time it came to fruition, had very wide support.
I remember the discussion that we had in the task force about what that led to the registry. And it was because there was no web at the time. No one used the words internet or web or anything at that time. But I remember leaning back, we're talking about trying to figure out how people could comment on things that government was bringing down the pipe. And I said, you know, it's too bad it wasn't like some kind of a giant computer that you could just look at. And everything would be on that computer. And somebody who was sitting in that day from the Interministerial Committee said, well, actually, we've been kind of working on something that would do that, where you'd be allowed to look at proposals that were coming along. And we've actually looked at something like that. And I remember that was when the light went on, like, man, Well, you create.
That's interesting to hear from your side, because I wouldn't have thought you were a player in that part of it at all. But you know, that's why we're having this conversation. One of the components of the bill was notification of the general public, and we had a serious debate in the ministry, as Mike is suggesting, between whether we do that through newspaper listings, and we looked at all the sudden local papers that were out there and how much that would cost. It was a big budget item, range of consultation that the bill was likely to generate, versus what was then called a bulletin board. Mm. And it was a gamble. Most of us had no experience with bulletin boards. I kind of knew they were around, but I hadn't ever used one. But we had one or two smart people in the ministry who knew about this, so they could design it, and it would be very cheap. But in those days, although quite a few people had home computers, they weren't that common. So we, and this again was Heller's leadership on the ground, we trained the librarians of Ontario. She went with her team, library to library, training them in groups, and if necessary, even equipping some libraries with computers so that the public could go to their local library and access the bulletin board.
And you know, it's interesting. I remember we talked about in the task force about where these registry access points would be located, and the libraries came up.
Yeah, exactly.
So, John, you got a...
Yeah, no,
so you come from the old process, and you roll over this process.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you were at
class action.
The advisory stuff, yeah.
And now all of a sudden you find yourself in this new thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's lots of things that were attractive about this process to the Gang of Four. Right? But initially it was...
By the way, stop. Who are the Gang of Four? Obviously you.
So George Howes, myself, Bob Anderson, and...
Norm Stewart. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, and so...
Norm was with Ford Motor Company.
Norm was with Ford. And so originally it was Environmental Bill of Rights, seen Ruth's bill, the private member's bill, scary sort of stuff. We're going to do a little defense here is probably going to happen because we're not sure what's coming down. We're not sure how the process is going to work. So we wanted to be there. It's better than not, right, to be involved somehow. If it was typical consultation, no disrespect meant to how things happen, but it's not very effective, typical, right? And you make some comments after things have been drafted and chances of getting them changed are pretty slim and everybody gets frustrated and mad and everybody goes to their corners, and we have to implement stuff that we don't all agree with. So the whole process, though, that was designed around this was based on, and I don't remember who said it, whether it was Ruth or somebody said it to us at some point, saying, look, we'll either do this and draft it and do the Bill of Rights, and you won't like it. Or you can get together, do the term of reference, come to an agreement, and we will implement whatever you do. And we thought, you know, government, like, is going to, the politicians are going to, over how long did it take us? 2 years?
A little less than 2 years. So 41 meetings.
Yeah, because they're actually going to implement whatever the consensus is. Well, that's really novel, right? They commit to it.
It's going to be the first time.
Well, yeah, I'd never experienced it, of course. So that was the fascinating part. So it turned from, in my view, and I think George and others would support this, in from a let's play defense into very much offense-based, let's try and make this better, get better decision-making around environmental stuff, better outcomes, where all the people know that they can participate in some way. We have business and others have some certainty of process. There's an opportunity to consult. If we get better decisions, then we can implement with certainty, and we'll move ahead quicker and get stuff done. And it will be environmentally sustainable, or better anyway, right? So the whole thing was a win-win at the end of the day. And Michael did a great job with the support of, you know, Sally Marin and others that were involved, Peter, and, you know, I can't remember all the names, right, that were involved in all the stuff we did, but the task force worked very well. And there were tough discussions, though. It wasn't all easy. We walked away a couple of times going, we're not doing this. You talk about public trust and a whole bunch of other things. You're going, no, I don't think so. But at the end of the day,
it almost fell apart.
Yeah, no, we were pretty close. We were done. We were walking. Yeah. We got so close. But hey, part of that is just negotiating too, right? We didn't want some things in. We ended up with a good compromise. People were happy. It's worked pretty well for 20 years. So that, I think, speaks to how the process worked, how we got to what we did. And in 20 years, we've never managed to, and I've pushed it every chance I can get, in dealing with other ministries and other pieces of legislation to follow this process, get terms of reference, get the commitment of the ministry and the political folks, and go and implement. And it's been a battle. And we've talked about it in many, many cases. People said, oh, yeah, we'll do this principle-based process. They look at it and go, yeah, we'll write something up and we'll send it to you and you can comment on it.